The federal judge says former President Donald Trump can't shield White House documents from a congressional committee investigating the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol. The former president has already appealed the ruling, which was released last night. And the committee is issuing more subpoenas in the investigation, looking to hear from a new set of aides and advisors to Trump about the insurrection. It's the Week in Washington. We'll talk about that and more. And you could join in, as always, at 800-642-1234. Are there questions you still want answered about January 6th and the events at the Capitol? Do you think Trump's advisors should cooperate with congressional investigators? Should Trump be able to keep some of his communications as president leading up to the 6th private? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Reed Wilson is a national correspondent at The Hill. Reed, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
We've got this court ruling last night on the House committee's efforts to get some documents from the Trump administration. This is not the end of the line for court challenges. What did the judge say?
So the president, the former president, effectively tried to exert executive privilege after he has left the White House. Now, ordinarily, for most of these things, an incumbent president will extend that executive privilege power or authority to his or his predecessor. President Biden, though, says that these documents should be turned over to Congress, and the judge sided with President Biden, saying effectively the incumbent president is the one who has authority to safeguard executive privilege rather than his predecessor. And the quote that really stood out to me was, "Presidents are not kings and plaintiff is not president." So she ruled that the current president is the one with the authority, and given that Biden supports handing these documents over to Congress, that they should be handed over unless a higher court than her disagrees.
And what's the timeline on that? The former president is taking this to higher courts. When could this whole debate end?
Well, whenever the Supreme Court decides to get involved in this or decides not to get involved, either way. But Biden has ordered that the documents be turned over by Friday unless there is a court injunction. Now, these records are held by the National Archives and Records Administration, which is one of these government agencies that's better known for safeguarding the physical copies of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence than they are for getting involved in court fights.
I want to go listen to Congressman Benny Thompson, Democrat, on the committee, chair of the House Select Committee investigating January 6th, reacting here to the ruling last night on CNN.
You know, we are a nation of laws. So if you take your issue to court and lose, then you need to man up and deal with it and not be a spoiled brat.
What kind of documents do we know anyway that Representative Thompson and his colleagues, what are they looking for here?
Well, they're looking for communications between President Trump and a number of his former advisors and allies, both inside and outside the administration, specifically documents about what people are starting to call the command center. This is a group of Trump advisors outside the administration who set up an office at the Willard Intercontinental Hotel. That's right across the street from the White House, where in that sort of bunker for a couple of days leading up to the January 6th insurrection, former Trump advisors like Steve Bannon, Bernie Kerik, the former police commissioner in New York, were overseeing efforts to try to pressure Congress into overturning the legitimate election results of the 2020 elections.
Meanwhile, subpoenas going on, more key figures in the Trump administration there. What are some of the names you're hearing getting subpoenas now from this committee?
So the committee has dramatically expanded the number of people they have subpoenaed searching for information about this, and they fall into a couple of buckets. On one side is the campaign bucket. That includes Bill Stepien, who was Trump's campaign manager in 2020, Jason Miller, who has played a role in Trump's political career, basically going back to 2015. Then the second bucket you'd call sort of the people who were involved in trying to overturn the election results. I mentioned Bernie Kerik, Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor, and John Eastman, the attorney who wrote a memo arguing that Vice President Mike Pence had the authority to overturn the election results. Mike Pence disagreed with that interpretation of law and history. And I got to say, pretty much every constitutional scholar in America agrees with Pence on that one. And then the third bucket is people who worked at the White House itself. And these are the people who I think you can start inferring inferring basically that we'll have a pretty strong interest in that court case over presidential executive privilege. There are people like Stephen Miller, the longtime policy advisor, Kayleigh McEnany, the press secretary, and John McEntee, who was the White House personnel director, who we know from some recent reporting from ABC's Jonathan Carl, was pretty involved in trying to make sure that the administration was stocked with people who were loyal to Trump first rather than the country first.
Talking to Reed Wilson from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, including the January 6th committee in the House. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. You know, you guys in the media and the Democrats are in for a big because the Supreme Court will overrule this. The executive branch has full and equal power to the other two branches in government. And what happened while Trump was president, he does have executive privilege, and this will be overturned by the Supreme Court. So this is not a victory for the Democrats. You'll see.
Jeff, thanks for the call. I wouldn't be surprised either way the Supreme Court ruled on this, Reed. I don't know about you. But that argument that this is an equal branch, Congress doesn't have the ability. How much oversight ability does the Congress have?
Well, the Congress has substantial oversight ability over just about everything in the executive branch, except for communications with the president. Now, what the U.S. District Court judge ruled yesterday was that extends to the president, the current one, not the past one. Again, presidents are not kings, and the plaintiff is not president. So if the incumbent president says that these documents must be turned over, this judge, at least, who is a U.S. District Court judge for the District of Columbia, said that no, that's in fact a decision that the current president, Joe Biden, gets to make. We'll see what the U.S. Supreme Court has to say about this, but this is uncharted legal territory, and I'm not aware, and I haven't in my research in the half hour leading up to coming onto the show, I haven't found anybody who is aware of a time when the Supreme Court ruled on a former president's claim of executive privilege when the current president is willing to override it.
Thanks for that call, Jeff. We'll go now to Jimmy in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Good afternoon. I just had a question on executive privilege. Can executive privilege shield criminal activity? Because it appears that the committee is looking for some type of conspiracy that went beyond just planning the protest, but actually maybe if some of Trump's advisors or some of these other folks had actually planned, attacking the Capitol. And I'll take my answer off there.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. I've seen, Reed, that argument anyway. Is this something members of this congressional committee are talking about, that executive privilege wouldn't necessarily apply if there was some sort of conspiracy being concealed there?
Well, I can't pretend to be a legal expert on this particular question. What I can tell you is the committee is investigating a few key areas that I think all touch on this particular thing. One is the money. Where did the money come from that funded the groups that organized the protests that led up to the insurrection on January 6th? A second bucket is sort of the planning. How closely was the White House involved in the meetings with those at the Willard and in other meetings that took place at the Trump International Hotel here in Washington, D.C. And then the third thing, and I think that the thing that's going to be hardest for them to answer, is the question of violence. Was anybody in the White House aware of plans to commit violence against Congress that took place on January 6th, or that could have taken place, or plans to commit the violence that did take place against the members of the U.S. Capitol Police and other police services?
Jimmy, thanks for calling in. We'll go to Joe now in Baraboo. Joe, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say that it seems like the Biden administration has, and I mean the Biden administration and Merrick Garland, have been especially restrained through all this, and I think that's to be applauded. However, sometimes I think too restrained, always for fear of something being called political, that their motives are political. Well, this whole thing is political. And I'm very tired of folks saying, well, because it's political, it's bad. That's what our nation is founded on, is the Constitution, which involves politics.
Gotcha, Joe. Thanks a lot for the call. And a lot of eyes on Merrick Garland, Attorney General Reed, on a lot of these issues, including whether he will pursue any action against Steve Bannon for resisting congressional subpoenas.
Right. And Steve Bannon has been held in contempt by Congress. This is now up to the Justice Department to enforce. There have been some calls from Democrats and some Democrats in Congress for Merrick Garland and the current Justice Department to take a harder line against those who were accused of wrongdoing and who have been convicted in the January 6th insurrection. There is growing pressure on the Justice Department to act. And at the same time, there's a cross pressure on the White House to restore the independence, some of which was lost during the Trump administration, of the Justice Department. So this is sort of a no-win situation for the Attorney General, and one that the president is probably hesitant to weigh in on, as he promises a more independent judiciary.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Reed Wilson, national correspondent at The Hill, with us today for a look at the top stories in Washington. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Moving on to infrastructure. Are you celebrating the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure package? Are you worried about more government spending? How about that other spending package on social issues, climate change prevention, and more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our look at the top stories in national politics. Reed Wilson stays with us from The Hill. Infrastructure now on deck is redistricting around the country. Join in with your thoughts or questions about either at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Reed, the Congress passed this infrastructure bill, the bipartisan one, the first of two big ones that Democrats are hoping to pass. Signing ceremony, I'm just reading, scheduled now for Monday with President Biden. How big a deal is it that this ended up getting passed?
Well, it's a big deal in a couple of ways. First of all, it's a big deal in that it's the first major investment in infrastructure in decades, and one that is going to send billions of dollars to states across the country. We're already seeing headlines as I sort of do my daily scan of, you know, state X gets, you know, Y billion dollars in money for fixing roads and bridges. It's also a big deal because this vote was a sea change in the way Congress has acted. Usually, infrastructure bills are things that everybody wants to vote for because everybody gets a chunk of money for projects in their district. And then Congressman X gets to go to a ribbon cutting and say, hey, look what I delivered to this district. In this time around, though, we saw 19 Republicans vote in favor of it in the U.S. Senate, which is a pretty healthy margin, although not quite what you might have expected in the past. In the House, though, just 13 Republicans voted in favor of it, and almost the majority of those were from New York and New Jersey, two places that are badly in need of infrastructure dollars. So this tells you a little bit that, you know, even something that in the past was a rubber stamp gimme win for every member of Congress has now gotten caught up in the partisan bickering that dominates D.C.
Looking at the political outcome of this, as I mentioned, a signing ceremony coming up. There's been critique from within the Democratic Party, I think, that Democrats don't sell their successes well enough. Do you expect to see some footballs being spiked and champagne being popped?
There's going to be some of that in Washington, but that's less important than the footballs being spiked in, you know, Kenosha and Milwaukee and Green Bay and everywhere else, you know, from coast to coast, as members of Congress, you know, talk about what they've brought back to their district. Now, that's going to be important for Democrats to do. And really, they have suffered so much in polling lately, in part because the main story has been about who's bickering with who on Capitol Hill and the legislative sausage making rather than the actual outcomes of the bill. So now that they've got something, you know, a lot of the Democrats I was talking to this week were telling me, all right, we've had our year of debate. Now it's time for a year of action. That's what they hope will rebound them in the minds of voters. You know, I don't recall a rebound of that type going into a midterm election in recent years, but the Democrats certainly have to try.
Let's bring on a caller. Ron is with us in Madison. Ron, hi.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
What do you want to bring up?
Mine is Well, I have a question and a comment. The question is, how do we change what I'm going to say? I mean, he's been around the block. He knows the establishment. This is nothing new, but we have an infrastructure bill that contains pork. And while it's nothing new and it's been going on forever, why is there nothing over the years that can be done about taking out the pork? For instance, I noticed the infrastructure bill reported this morning that by 2026, all cars will have to have some sort of driver alert system, either interlock system to report the drivers either under the influence or not under the influence. What does that have to do with infrastructure? Just as a simple example.
Ron, thanks for the call. That would be a traffic safety portion. People are driving on the highways, I guess, intoxicated, Reed. But his wider concerns that pork finds its way into an infrastructure package like this.
Yeah, I mean, the infrastructure package is the ultimate pork product, if you will. But then again, you know, the roads and bridges that are in a congressman's district are the ones that need to be fixed. I mean, those roads and bridges have to be somewhere. And so a lot of this money that goes to individual projects in a congress member's district is money that those districts need to be fixed. And I'd also bring up the fact that if you take away Congress's power of the purse, their power to direct where that spending goes, then you're basically leaving the decision up to bureaucrats in the Department of Transportation building here in Washington, D.C. Now, do you really want that, or do you want your member of Congress to direct, you know, X million dollars to go fix that bridge over there?
Thanks for the call, Ron, at 800-642-1234. Reed, now Democrats looking at the apparently harder-to-pass piece of legislation. They won't get Republican support, or very little, if any, on the other one, the social safety net spending, climate change, and more. Where is that right now?
Right. They're not going to get any Republican votes on this. And basically, they're all waiting to figure out if they get the votes of five moderates in the House of Representatives and one moderate, Senator Joe Manchin, in the U.S. Senate. Those moderates are waiting for a score, a sort of basically a fiscal note from the Congressional Budget Office, which produces sort of cost estimates for how much these things are going to add to the deficit. Now, the CBO has said that they're going to take, they have to take a few days to get some of this out. But the moderates promised when the infrastructure bill passed that they would vote for it by at least by the latest next week. So we'll see when Congress comes back whether or not they have a sufficient score from the CBO. Basically, they're hoping that what the White House says that this bill will pay for itself will prove to be true, according to the nonpartisan arbiters over at the CBO.
Talking to Reed Wilson from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national news. Reed, I know you're watching redistricting around the country. It's going on here in Wisconsin and, of course, everywhere. What are some of the states you have your eyes on right now?
This is my favorite thing to talk about every decade. I mean, this is an amazingly political process that's playing out in states like Wisconsin right now, where the governor's either threatened to or already has vetoed the district lines that state legislative Republicans had passed. Right now, we know the contours, the basic outlines of the districts in about half the states, but we're waiting for the big states like California to finalize their map, Florida, where Republicans just put out a draft map that I'm still going through the numbers here, but it looks only marginally good for them. The bottom line here that I'd say is Republicans have basically drawn themselves into a position where if the elections were held in last year's atmosphere, in the 2020 environment, Republicans would reclaim control of Congress by at least a few seats. But of course, we're not going to run the midterm elections in last year's environment. Right now, the environment looks worse for Democrats, so they could be looking at a real catastrophe here coming towards the midterms if they don't dramatically turn things around. Now, what could turn things around? The infrastructure bill, the reconciliation package, and a booming economy, and maybe this inflation surge dies down and people start feeling better about the economy. Is that going to happen? Not entirely certain it will. History does not argue for a president's party. Only twice in the last century has a first-term president picked up seats in the U.S. House of Representatives in their first midterm election.
Some states, the process is controlled by Democrats, and they're drawing Democratic-friendly maps. Some states, it's Republicans. Some have a neutral or a nonpartisan effort to do it. All told, who has a better playing field in terms of control of this process in various states, Reid?
Well, right now, Republicans control about twice as many U.S. House seats, control the map lines for twice as many U.S. House seats as do Democrats. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to draw twice as many seats, twice as many Republican seats as the Dems are. For example, take a state like Alabama, where there are seven districts. Right now, there are six Republicans and one Democrat. Well, they just drew district lines that are going to have six Republicans and one Democrat. So there's not really a bunch of change there. If Wisconsin changes, it's probably going to change by only one seat. Retiring Congressman Ron Kind's seat seems to be in the crosshairs of the debate right now. And, you know, in some other places where Republicans have all the control, you know, a state like West Virginia, they're actually going to lose a seat because the delegation shrinks by one. So it's very complex math, and we haven't seen the end of this yet. And let me tell you, every time a state passes their final maps, the other party is taking them straight to court. So this is going to be a very good decade for election lawyers. And any law students who are listening, let me tell you, go into that election law field. That is a growth industry right now.
Lots of money to be made once every 10 years. Reed, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, man.
That's Reed Wilson. He's a national correspondent at The Hill. He was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Coming up after the news, after an upset win in the Virginia governor's race, national Republicans say they'll focus on parents' frustrations with schools and education. We'll talk to an expert on education politics about the forces behind the renewed attention and what it means for elections and for kids' education.